From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report. Could this be the year that Florida schools start getting significantly more money from the state legislature?
We're really trying to help and reward teachers in Title I schools.
Also this week, there are other pressing matters demanding lawmakers' fiscal attention this year.
The number one thing I'm looking forward to is continuing the conversation on prison and criminal justice reform.
We'll also get some insights into what that might mean for all those important member projects, and we'll delve into what changes to federal rules might mean to Florida's proposed restrictions on smoking and vaping. I'm Tom Flanagan. Happy New Year, and welcome to Capitol Report. K through 12 education is teed up to be a topic of focus during the 2020 lawmaking session. At issue heading into January 14th are teacher pay and bonuses. Ryan Daly has more on what to expect as lawmakers convene in Tallahassee.
Governor Ron DeSantis is calling this the year of the teacher. He wants to replace the current Best and Brightest bonus program with a revamped structure under the same name. And he's asking for $300 million for it.
So we're getting rid of the Best and Brightest, which, you know, had gone through these iterations and I think was well-intentioned, but I don't know that that really ever hit the mark. So the $300 million is going to provide up to $7,500 in teacher bonuses and up to, I think, $10,000 in principal bonuses.
The governor proposes a tiered system where teachers would qualify for bonuses based on their school's performance. For instance, the top tier would see teachers and principals qualify if a school gained 6 or more points towards its school grade. Teachers and principals in Title I schools would stand to gain twice the bonus money compared to their non-Title I counterparts.
But we're really trying to help and reward teachers in Title I schools.
DeSantis says the majority of schools in the state are designated Title I, meaning most students that attend are from low-income families. The previous versions of Best and Brightest had been a lightning rod for criticism, with some claiming the money could be better spent to raise salaries across the board rather than incentive-based non-recurring bonuses. Overall, the governor proposes putting $22.9 billion into K-12 public schools' main funding mechanism, the Florida Education Finance Program, or FEFP. That represents a $50 per student bump to the base student allocation, which is flexible funding to individual schools based on enrollment. The previous budget saw a $75 per student increase to the BSA. Meanwhile, the Republican leaders of both chambers seem skeptical of DeSantis' teacher pay plan. Senate President Bill Galvano says he's wary of the state trying to take a one-size-fits-all approach to raising teacher pay. That's in response to DeSantis' pitch to boost starting teacher pay to $47,500, an investment of roughly $600 million.
It is a local issue. It truly is. And when we increased the BSA as we did last year, one of the initial things that we did was look at what districts actually did increase pay. And we were pleased to see that a majority did. So, you know, I'm cautious about us owning that issue at the state level. So that is part of the analysis that's taking place.
The outgoing chamber president acknowledges different districts have different levels of pay for teachers and different costs of living in their areas. He says Republican Senators Manny Diaz and Kelly Stargell, chairs of key education committees, are trying to figure out a plan to give districts autonomy in raising pay. In the House, Speaker Jose Oliva has also been critical of DeSantis' request, which he calls ambitious, saying in a statement the details remain obscure. Oliva did praise the governor's overall budget asks, though, adding, quote, his commitment to responsible spending is crystal clear. The day before the 2020 legislative session kicks off, on January 13th, statewide teachers union, the Florida Education Association, is planning a rally at the Capitol.
The day before our governor makes his State of the State address, to speak with one voice and to tell this legislature to do right by our kids and our public schools and those who take care of them. So I'm expecting thousands of people.
FEA President Frederick Ingram says he expects thousands of people from across the state to show up. I'm Ryan Daly.
With session getting underway in just under 2 weeks, lawmakers will soon consider the issues they believe are the most important. Blaise Gainey spoke with senators in South, Central, and North Florida about what they are looking forward to this session.
North Florida Democratic Senator Bill Montford is entering his last session as a Florida lawmaker and wants to focus on salaries.
If you look over the last 10 years, our state employees basically have gotten one raise. And during that same 10 years, we changed the policy so that state employees now contribute 3% of their salary to the state retirement. So many of our employees, state employees, are going backwards, quite frankly. And if you also look at the fact that our state, Florida, is number 50 in terms of the number of state employees per capita. And if you look at the salaries, they don't rank high. And so what does that really mean? It means we have few state employees doing a lot of work. The danger in that, and the danger in not recognizing state employees by giving them a pay raise, the danger in that is it's hard to get bright young people to come in to state government.
In Central Florida, St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis says he plans to continue reforming the state's criminal justice system and advancing the transportation system for the future.
Well, the number one thing I'm looking forward to is continuing the conversation on prison and criminal justice reform. Our new corrections secretary has come out and said that the current state of the Department of Corrections is unsustainable. This is something that our office has been talking about for years, that the crisis that's going on in the prison system. It needs significant reform. It needs a plan. And so we're working to put a master plan in place for the Department of Corrections. And if you couple that with what we're doing in the criminal justice system to try to relieve some of the pressure on the overall system. So that's the number one thing I'm interested in and working on. The number two is really focusing in on the future of transportation and what that means for electric vehicles. I believe that the biggest shift that you and I are going to see over the next decade is the shift to electrification. And so we need to get Florida ready. We need to get Florida ready as we think about hurricanes and evacuation routes, but also just access to charging.
In South Florida, Miami Republican Senator Anna Terry Flores, like Senator Montford, is entering her last session and wants to make changes on the way out.
2020 session will be the last of my 16 regular sessions. And this year I am looking at the issue of combating vaping. We see that more and more middle school students and high school students are vaping, and there are so many health risks associated with that. So I'm working on a bill with the Attorney General to further ensure that there are restrictions against that, and particularly against areas and entities that sell the vape products, to make sure that they are not selling any of those products to underage individuals.
So from state employee salaries, electric vehicles, and vaping, lawmakers have a full agenda in 2020. Session begins January 14th and ends on March 13th. I'm Blaise Gainey.
Today, Governor Ron DeSantis announced that the Florida Division of Emergency Management has awarded just under $29 million for hurricane recovery in the first week of the new year. These awards include funding through the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, along with Public Assistance Grant Program and the Florida Citrus Recovery Block Grant Program. DeSantis says this is on top of the nearly $1.5 billion in combined state and federal storm recovery funds that were distributed throughout 2019. The nearly $29 million awarded the first week of the new year includes more than $11 million for Marion County, nearly $9 million for citrus growers impacted by Hurricane Irma, and more than $2.8 million for Lee County schools. Legislation filed at the Capitol would make it harder for cities, counties, school boards, and other local districts to raise taxes. A measure filed in the Florida House of Representatives would ask voters to approve a constitutional amendment making it tougher for local governments to raise taxes by requiring 2/3 vote of the membership of any governing body to increase taxes. Opponents of the plan, which has yet to be heard by a legislative committee, say the proposal will make it harder for governments to find money during times of need. But plan proponents feel the measure would require local politicians to prove the necessity of a tax increase. Supporters assert too many local governments are raising taxes on citizens at the same time the state legislature is trying to reduce the tax burden. The legislature is already required to have a 2/3 majority to raise taxes or fees, that following a 2018 constitutional amendment that was approved by 65% of Florida voters. Still to come on Capitol Report, with state revenues not as robust as many lawmakers had hoped, this year's legislative session may not be a great year for projects members can bring back to the home folks.
There's only so many things that we can fund, even though the state budget is $91 billion.
Lawmakers are gearing up this session to discuss possible solutions to gun violence and mass shootings.
There's lots we can do, short of circumscribing or limiting gun rights. And we'd like to have a meaningful conversation about this session.
The Florida legislature appeared ready to crack down on smoking and vaping, but new federal rules could make those matters moot.
It could be that states do pass their own quote-unquote Tobacco 21 laws, but they're really focused on enforcement and licensing.
And despite legislative restrictions, the push to register released felons as Florida voters continues.
The overwhelming majority of people who have felony convictions will qualify under this process, and sometimes they don't even need to go through this process.
As the legislative session looms on the horizon, lawmakers are trying to squeeze in their personal projects into the upcoming year's budget. But Robbie Gaffney reports not all of those proposals will make it.
Justin Rowland served in the U.S. Marine Corps for 8 years. He's gone twice to Iraq and has been struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
I tended to kind of be a shut-in. I've got a wife and 2 kids, so we want to go out and do things, but there's a lot of times when I just flat out don't want to leave the house.
Rowland says he would always be on the lookout for some kind of danger, causing him anxiety. He says nothing was working for him until he enrolled in Canines for Warriors. It's a program that pairs service dogs with veterans and active duty service members. People from all over the U.S. can apply. The program is national but operates in Florida. Rowland is from Michigan and now lives with Mac, a service dog given to him through Canines for Warriors. He says Mac gets him out of the house.
But he'll tend to sense when I'm kind of getting anxious or depressed, and he'll usually just do something goofy and just kind of keep my mind off of things. Like he just knows what to do at the right time.
Last year, two Florida lawmakers tried to get the state to help fund Canines for Warriors, but their proposal died. Now, Miami Democratic Representative Nicholas Duran is trying this year to get Canines for Warriors in the state budget. He wants more than $600,000 to be given, but with so many projects vying for approval, not all of them will make it through the budget process.
ARC is looking for a $1.1 million. This money is needed. It's non-recurring to finish a project.
This will be requests utilized to provide critical long-term health care.
This bill requests $740,000.
For purposes of this committee, it requires a $352,919 expenditure.
You're listening to an Appropriations Committee meeting where lawmakers are presenting their member projects, which typically ask for state money. Every year, lawmakers get requests from their districts to pass these projects. It could be funding for a new park, restoring a bridge, or even a festival. Florida Tax Watch keeps track of these projects and sends a list of them to Florida's governor. Dominic Calabro is president of the group. He says in the past, a lot of these local projects were vetoed.
It's just, there's only so many things that we can fund, even though the state budget is $91 billion.
Calabro says prior commitments like education and health care, which make up the bulk of state spending, can make it hard for the legislature to fund extra programs. He says in the coming years, there's going to be less money and fewer projects getting approval.
There's nothing wrong with them. It's good for legislators to respond to the demands and legitimate concerns of their constituents. But there's got to be discipline, accountability, and transparency so that people know what they're voting on.
I'm Robbie Gaffney.
A number of firearms-related bills are piling up as lawmakers prepare to head into the session. Regan McCarthy reports some put more rules in place for gun purchases, while others broaden the scope of where guns could be carried.
Does anybody think we have too many gun laws in Florida right now?
That's Senator Tom Lee. President Bill Galvano tasked Lee with looking into causes and possible solutions of gun violence and mass shootings. Lee held a committee meeting on the subject in September. The answer to his question depends largely on who you ask. Democrats say Florida needs more laws to keep firearms out of the hands of people who intend to do harm.
There's lots we can do short of circumscribing or limiting gun rights. And we'd like to have a meaningful conversation about that this session.
Coral Gables Democratic Representative Javier Fernandez says one idea is expanding the state's red flag law to let friends or family members ask a judge to remove somebody's guns if they think that person is a danger to themselves or others. Other Democrats are pushing measures to ensure background checks, even in private sales. Some are even calling for a ban on assault-style weapons and large-capacity ammunition magazines.
That doesn't deal with the millions of those weapons that are already out. They're already in possession of people. So banning them now is not going to solve the problem of the millions that are already out there.
Department of Law Enforcement Commissioner Rick Swearingen says limiting access to firearms isn't likely to do much good.
Generally, prohibition doesn't work. It didn't work with alcohol in the 20s. It hasn't worked with drugs. So banning a particular item, I go back to, and I don't care about those issues as much as I care about how do we stop these from happening. And the way we do that is through proven studies. Let's identify the behaviors of these people. And regardless of what weapon they choose, regardless of their ideology, and regardless of where they want to carry this out, let's stop them before they ever get to that point.
Meanwhile, lawmakers like Anthony Sabatini say more access to firearms might actually help keep people safer. He wants to repeal a provision preventing people from carrying guns on public colleges and university campuses.
I want to remove that because there's no evidence or facts to show that concealed weapons permit holders are dangerous in any way. In fact, they make places more safe by literally just being there because a responsible law-abiding citizen, proficient in the use of firearms, makes a place more safe.
It's really scary, especially with all of the recent violence that has been going on. It's extremely scary to think that they think the solution is to have more guns.
Elham Shikari is earning her PhD in urban planning at Florida State University. She says the thought of people carrying guns on campus puts her on edge. And she says the job of keeping places safe should be left to the police.
How can anyone trust anyone else to be responsible with that? So I think that just practically speaking, that does not make much sense. And just, realistically, how many people are actually trained enough to be able to do that?
The question of how to best keep people safe from gun violence is a discussion that's likely to continue well into the upcoming legislative session. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Under a new federal law, stores can't sell tobacco products to anyone under the age of 21. The Federal Food and Drug Administration is also limiting the sale of e-cigarettes and vaping flavors. It comes as bills to do both are pending in the Florida legislature ahead of the upcoming lawmaking session. Lynn Hatter looks at what's left for states to do.
Before Congress raised the purchasing age to 21, a number of states, along with the District of Columbia and the U.S. territory of Guam, had already done so. Tobacco 21 Eastern Regional Director Shannon Quinby says even with those federal moves, there's still work states can do.
It could be that states do pass their own quote-unquote tobacco 21 laws, but they're really focused on enforcement and licensing.
The new law puts the responsibility on retailers and doesn't punish young smokers. A similar effort in Florida failed during the last legislative session, but has been refiled. Its sponsor is Republican Senator David Simmons. He's pleased with the federal government's moves, but
there is a certain amount of confusion about how far the federal legislation as well as the regulations by the FDA are, and certainly the FDA regulations are just that, regulations by a governmental agency.
Simmons points to some apparent loopholes to the purchasing age provision, like what happens if a 21-year-old purchases a product for an 18-year-old. This, Simmons says, is what he plans on addressing in his bill to raise the smoking age to 21.
How do students who are in high school get vaping and other nicotine products? They get them from people who are about their age, who have been able previously to purchase them, and then they distribute them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an 18-year-old right now. We've got to look at the ways to handle this, the ways to deal with the distribution of these products to young people.
Simmons and his co-sponsor, Republican Representative Jackie Toledo, are working together on revamping their proposals to target enforcement of the new federal law. As Congress was approving raising the purchasing age, the Federal Food and Drug Administration was moving forward with a crackdown on e-cigarette flavors. It approved new rules on January 2nd, effectively banning most e-cigarette flavors except tobacco and menthol. The language only applies to devices that come pre-filled, like the popular Juul. It does not apply to products that have to be manually refilled, like the tank system sold in vaping stores. And such stores can continue to sell flavored refills. Tobacco 21's Quinby calls the FDA's and the tobacco purchasing age law rules a compromise.
The president had promised to clear the market of all flavored e-cigarette products in September. He then walked that back throughout the fall and said, you know, maybe not, maybe we don't do that.
As President Donald Trump was making suggestions on how to treat e-cigarettes and flavors, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was suggesting the state hold off on any similar plan. Last year, the Florida Senate approved Simmons' proposal to raise the smoking age, but that could not get through the Florida House of Representatives. This year, he's feeling optimistic about the proposals.
I know that there have been various senators with whom I've spoken who don't believe that the issue is the not so much the flavors, but more the distribution and the distribution network. And so these are things that we're going to look at. And if, in fact, the evidence shows that that the flavors are a such an inducement for young people that they need to be banned, then I think that's something that will be discussed in the committee process.
Florida lawmakers will be back in Tallahassee for the 2020 lawmaking session. It begins on January 14th. I'm Lynn Hatter.
A House Republican today filed a proposal that would create a statewide office of resiliency in Governor Ron DeSantis' office that is part of efforts to address the impacts of climate change. The proposal, filed by Representative Cindy Stevenson, Republican of St. John's, is identical to a measure that has started moving forward in the Senate. A Leon County Circuit judge this week appointed the Florida Department of Financial Services as a receiver for the liquidation of a financially troubled auto insurer. Circuit Judge Ron Flurry issued the order earlier this week, about 3 weeks after the department asked for Windhaven Insurance Company to be placed into receivership. You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, after Floridians voted to pass an amendment restoring voting rights for people with felony convictions, the state passed a controversial new law. All fines and fees would need to be paid off before they could register to vote. There are ongoing court battles, but a handful of counties across the state are working within that new law to grant voting rights to people who technically still owe money. WLRN's Danny Rivero reports.
There are 17 people here on the docket in a Miami courtroom, and every one of them is waiting to get their voting rights restored.
I feel excited about moving forward in life.
Cynthia Cray just got her rights back. She hasn't been able to cast a ballot since she was convicted of a felony 10 years ago, and she signed up to vote on the spot.
I've been a convicted felony so long, and we got Donald Trump in the presidency. We can't keep having that foolishness. I vote because I don't want another Trump.
And Andre Williams says he's elated at the prospect of being able to vote again. It's also been about 10 years since he cast a ballot.
Oh, the next election is going to be fun. Oh, boy, is it going to be fun. Changes are about to be made. Donald Trump. Toodaloo.
What's happening here in Miami is not some kind of loophole or clever workaround designed to enroll new Democrats. Cynthia Cray and Andre Williams and the other people here, they technically haven't finished their court sentences under the new law. That's because they still owe money for their case or haven't met some other requirements like community service. But the new law also includes a way out. It lets courts declare someone's sentence complete, no matter what they still have to do or money they still owe. The courts can waive that money. Carlos Martinez is public defender of Miami-Dade County.
You hear about the politics of being able to vote, but you forget that some of it is the redemptive value of somebody knowing that the government recognizes that they've paid their debt to society and they've told them you have value again.
Miami-Dade County is one of just four counties with a new program to streamline the process of giving voting rights back. Also Broward, Palm Beach, and Hillsborough, some of the biggest population centers in the state. In all four counties, the majority of people voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 and went Democratic in 2018's governor's race. Martinez talked about the state law in a press conference announcing the new process.
We are following the plain language of the statute. And the plain language of the statute, as it is implemented in Miami-Dade County, will mean that the overwhelming majority of people who have felony convictions will qualify under this process. And sometimes they don't even need to go through this process. They can just go register to vote.
Volunteer attorneys are fielding calls to help people with felony convictions take their cases through the system. Or they're just helping clarify that they're already eligible to vote. Martinez says this could mean lots of new voters.
The estimate for Miami-Dade County is that there are about 150,000 people. That's not just cases, that's people that will qualify under this process.
There's this Republican state representative from Tampa, Jamie Grant. He wrote the new law, and he's frustrated that no Republican-leaning counties are using the waivers that he created.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't create the waivers not to be used.
When Grant wrote the state law that made paying off fines and fees a condition for getting voting rights back, he came under a lot of scrutiny. Some activists called the law a poll tax, suggesting he wanted to keep people from voting. He says the fact that only Democratic-leaning counties are using the waivers he created absolves him of that criticism.
If I'm trying to suppress the vote, and if I am Jim Crow Jamie, why did I create the waivers that Democrats are turning around and using? Which one is it? If the effect of what I passed flips the state blue, so be it. I'm good with that. I did my job.
Representative Grant, a Republican, says if the law he passed flips the state blue, he's good with that. Carmen Brown was the first to get her voting rights restored in the Miami courthouse.
Today was an unexpected but pleasurable, enjoyable, memorable, priceless moment in my life.
She hasn't been able to vote since she got out of prison in 1995.
It's been a long time. I can't. We stand to vote again. I'm ready to vote now.
Brown wouldn't say who she might be voting for, but she's counting the days. I'm Danny Rivero in Miami.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Danny Rivero. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us again next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.